So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
To say the guys around you respect you that much, to say you the top 100, you know what I mean, is like almost making all pro.
Kizer drops the throw. He is going to be hit again. That ball's out again. Ngakoue hit him that time. Dante Fowler tries to fall on it. The ball is in the end zone. Jacksonville has fallen on it for a touchdown. They're not going to take that one away. Delvin Smith in the end zone for the score, and that'll finish it off.
Changing the game. You know, when we talk about being the best, the most dominant on the field, and pound for pound, I don't see a linebacker that's outplaying me.
Dropping the throw. Steps up. Now he's going to get hit. Ball is out. The ball is out. Delvin Smith picks it up and runs along the right sideline. Inside the 30, the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown. Delvin Smith is running back, and it's a touchdown for Jacksonville.
You scoop and score for 50 yards. You're in coverage. How do you even see on that ball?
Eyes everywhere. Eyes everywhere. You know, playmaker. Big-time players play big-time plays in big games. And that's what I did today. That's what the defense, that's what the offense did. Special teams. Team win. Team win.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, good morning. Welcome in, everybody. A Check the Tape Tuesday. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Lagerman, as you just heard a moment ago. Good morning, guys. How are we?
Doing well.
Doing good.
I'm good. Yeah. We're all good.
Yeah, we're all good.
Sun came up again.
Kind of. A little overcast today, but
for the most part. Yeah.
It's a beautiful
earth
day.
Earth is spinning. Jags are on a five-game losing streak.
And is that how many it is?
It's a five-game losing streak.
Dadgummit.
Yes.
Doesn't feel like that, does it? It feels like 10.
Right. I was going to say, it certainly feels at least five. You almost can't remember the last time they won a football game. You throw the bye week in there, it's been even longer. And now you find out yesterday that they'll be without the services of Brandon Leonard for the rest of the year.
That hurts.
Of course it does.
I mean, he's captain, best offensive lineman, been playing probably the most consistent of any offensive lineman. And, yes, Tyler Shatley can come in and do a good job, but, I mean, now you're down a good player.
I'd like to preempt the Twitter wave that's coming this morning. Could you tell us if Shatley is strong? Is he a strong player?
Shatley's strong. Right. Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the strongest players on the Jaguars team, and bench presses, you know, 500-plus pounds. But the reality is he doesn't have the feet nor the leverage or the playing strength of Brandon Linder. It's just not, comparative. I mean, that's why he's a backup. And – he doesn't have the length of Brandon Linder, which I think at times Tyler Shatley struggles with the lack of length. I mean, he's a backup for a reason.
Sure he is.
He's a good, solid backup, but he's a backup for a reason.
Is he? What is he better in? Is he a better run blocker than a pass blocker?
He's probably equally adept. You know, I mean, he's got he does a good job in both. I don't think there's one particular area that he does better in, or you know, but the lack of length sometimes gets a player like him in trouble. Because if you have a defensive tackle that's got a certain level of strength, like the Indianapolis Colts, I think it was Al Woods, does have length and he's got some strength, then Shatley had a hard time trying to reach him. I mean, it's literally he was kind of pushing Shatley into the backfield. And the reality is that he was also kind of doing that to Brandon Linder a little bit. But Linder was able to get a little bit more of a stalemate than Tyler Shatley. So you just lose a little bit. You know, with an offense that – is struggling as it is, when you lose a little bit, it just seems like you're losing more.
Yeah, the offense at least put up points this week, right?
I thought they did a great job. You know, it's just the defense sucked. I mean, that's the reality. They stunk it up in the first half. And when you play a half of a game, you don't have a chance sometimes to win. And fortunately, they were able to get back into it, and the offense – kept up with somewhat of a track meet of a game, which is impressive, and give credit to Blake Bortles because I thought he played a pretty good game. I thought they executed on offense pretty well. But the performance of the defense in the first half was, wow, where does that come from?
Yeah.
I mean, I self-proclaimed one of the great defenses in the National Football League, and that half happens? Are you kidding me?
And oddly enough, just still statistically among the best teams in the league defensively.
Yeah, but when you look at it from a game-by-game-by-game standpoint, it's not good enough.
I mean, I understand that.
And that's the, I think, the hard part. I mean, because right now they're ranked third overall in the National Football
right.
League. I don't think the standings changed after last night's game, but that's what it was prior to last night's game. It's probably the same. But if you're a defensive player and you're sitting there pointing to your ranking as, you know, reason to say, hey, we're still a good defense, the reality is that good defenses win football games. And whatever it takes, whether it's giving up, you know, a certain level of points or getting takeaways or critical moments, putting the ball back in the offensive hands, scoring on defense, whatever it takes to win football games, the great defenses, the good defenses are able to get things done. And that's where the Jaguars' defense has fallen short. If they didn't have that first half, then they would have won that football game.
Oh, they would have, sure. If they held them to 20 points, they would have. It's odd because they're number one in pass defense in terms of yards allowed, which is typically the biggest indicator for your total defense because teams throw for a lot more than they do run. So that's why they're third overall. But they're 12th in points allowed, I believe. Mm-hmm. So not
and that's the indicator.
Yeah, not nearly as good in that category.
No, and that's the part that you can start to see drop pretty significantly. But the disappointing thing was, you know, the first half you just had guys running open. You know, and this is what the bye week, so that's week 10. I mean, week 10, you're having a breakdown like that?
What is that attributable to?
That's a great question, Mike. I mean, it's the fundamental defense. The Jaguars don't run a complex scheme. It's not hard to understand. Did you not get the call from the huddle? Were you not in the huddle? Did you just have a brain fart? I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is not hard stuff to execute that you're talking about where the breakdowns occurred at. And that's the part that I think is disappointing. Those mistakes should not happen. And those mistakes didn't happen with this defense last year. And coming off of a bye week where you think that you become mentally and physically refreshed, that wouldn't happen.
Who's to blame when this happens?
Is
it the individual player?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I know it's coached. I mean, you can't tell me that, you know, a three deep zone is not coached. I mean, that's 101. That's first day material. And man, okay, so if you got man.
I think I can coach that one. Tony, cover Jeff.
You got your guy.
Okay, Tony, I got you.
We did that on the playground.
What part of that do we not understand?
Who's got
here?
The kid? Who's got the big kid?
The cat coverage is the easiest one of all. I got that cat. Come on.
So we'll get into the defense because that certainly was a big letdown this week, Logs. But the return of Leonard Fournette was successful on some fronts. I mean, he got in the end zone twice.
Sure.
You know, he had 100 total yards. But 24 carries didn't yield much on the ground. And is this just the state of the Jaguars' running game right now that they're not going to be able to open holes for anybody?
The holes were there.
Were they?
Oh, gosh, yes. There were five plays that Leonard Fournette basically shortened the play because he either didn't accelerate or made a wrong cut or did something that ended the play.
So do you think is that a case of – maybe being a little tentative coming back off
maybe.
An injury, or is
maybe.
He maybe just – do running backs get rusty
maybe.
When they haven't, you know, been in a live situation in a while?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I just know that there's five plays that could have been explosive plays.
Brett Taylor said in the postgame, first thing he said, there were a couple – he goes, I'm not trying to brag. A couple of those runs I would have taken to the house.
Oh, my God. Fred would have lit it up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's five plays. I wrote them down, okay, and offensively, here's the play numbers, and this is the offensive play film, 35, 41, 44, 54, and 65. That's five plays right there that could have been big plays, big plays. I'm talking 20-plus to maybe house calls that Leonard Fournette left on the table. And you always hear coaches talk about how running backs in the running game – sometimes it's 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards,
but then you pop one.
Then you pop one, and that's where it has an impactful
sure.
play. Just like the Colts when they pop off that 53-yarder on a third and one.
Right.
It changed the dynamics of their stats somewhat. the Jaguars didn't have that because these five plays right here, because Leonard Fournette, for whatever reason, didn't accelerate to the hole, didn't attack the vertical part of the field, was trying to avoid a defender. He's a 225-pound back. People are scared of him. And you could see when guys are coming up, they're starting to kind of gather up and slow down. And then he's slowing down. If he just accelerates and runs sub-4.4, which we know he can, I mean, last year he was one of the fastest guys in the National Football League on that long run in Pittsburgh.
He had the two fastest runs in the league, two fastest times.
Where was that? I mean, I don't know why that didn't happen. Was it rusty? Was it concern about opening up because of the hamstring? Was it trying to protect your body? I don't know. You know, I was happy that he would returned, and he was happy that obviously the production was there offensively in his return. But here's another example. We talk about the defense, the difference between winning and losing. Well, these five plays might be the difference between winning and losing also, even with a substandard defense in
sure.
the first half.
Yeah. All right. Jeff Logman's here. Fat Tony is here. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's a Check the Tape Tuesday, where we give you the unvarnished look at what showed up on film for the Jacksonville Jaguars in their fifth consecutive loss, this one to the Indianapolis Colts. If you'd like to submit a question for Jeff or the panel, you're welcome to do that all morning long. You can always pick up the phone and call the program and tell us what you'd like to talk about Jaguar-related at 641-1010, the same number for the text line driven by Duval Ford. You can tweet us your questions at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Logs56, LOGS56, or, of course, post your thoughts on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. We're live at TIAA Bank Field. We'll continue to break down what went wrong for the Jags against the Indianapolis Colts and what they can maybe get right against the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up this Sunday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today live at TIA Bank Field. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Logman here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. As we do every Tuesday, we take your questions for Logs after taking a peek at the game film and seeing exactly what went right or what went wrong. In this case, unfortunately, more wrong than right if you don't win the football game. Logs, a lot of questions about lack of communication, miscommunication on defense. Miles Jack's role in it as the middle linebacker, a guy supposed to be getting everybody lined up. What are your general impressions of what's going on with Miles' game right now?
Well, I don't think he's real clean right now. I think he's having some lapses himself. There was a third and I think it was a third and 14 where it was a four deep, three underneath coverage. You guys probably remember it because it was my guy, the Virginia guy, Dontrell, is it
Inman?
Inman, the wide receiver for the Colts.
Yeah.
Caught it right in the middle of the field. And when Miles Jack drops into the coverage, he's the middle player of three that are underneath, so stay in the middle. And then he chases a guy that goes to the flats, vacates the middle, and then here comes Inman right in behind him and sits down, and it's like playing catch for Andrew Luck and Inman. I mean, it's an easy completion, an easy throw. I don't know why he vacated it. I mean, that you've got a guy sitting right out there waiting for that guy that was going to the flat. So that, and then obviously some of the quote-unquote communication issues that have been happening this year, some of those communication issues are, in fact, communication. Some of them are just mental bust. Could those mental bust have been prevented if the communication had been better? Probably. The perfect one, I think, or the one that I would say was a communication issue was the touchdown to Eric Ebron. It was for 12 yards. Mm-hmm. And when they were trying to get lined up, they didn't appear to know where they were going to line up. And so kind of a last-second hurry bit there by the defense, and then when they get lined up, Barry Church is in the middle of the field and kind of got his hands up trying to look at people. What are we doing? What are we doing? Well, it's cover zero, and it's a blitz, and you're covering the tight end, and there goes Eric Ebron for a touchdown. Nobody covers him.
But if it's like that, regardless of whether it should be like that, should somebody just call a timeout?
Well, yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you call a timeout, but it was especially on that because I think it was third and 10 at the – at the 12. So, I mean, they could have gotten a first down. But, yeah, I mean, perfect situation there that if something is not quite right, call timeout. Could that be on coaching? Yes. Could that be on the players as well? Yes.
Oh, yeah, I'm not blaming it on anyone
specifically. I think both, you know, both could have used a timeout there. But the issue that I have with that is that why did that happen? You know, much like the delay of game on the first play of a drive. How's that happen?
Right.
So is that on players or that on coaches? That's on both, you know. So that aspect of it is disappointing. But there are certain plays, too, that are not communication issues. You know, the long completion to the tight end. That was Eric Ebron, the first one early in the ball game for 53 yards. Everybody was doing what they were supposed to be doing but Jalen Ramsey. The long completion on the crossing route to T.Y. Hilton, everybody was doing what they were supposed to be doing but Jalen Ramsey. I mean, why didn't he get that communication or why didn't he understand the call? I don't know.
This came up with Doug Marrone yesterday, so let's listen in. He was asked about, you know, is this an issue of guys freelancing a little bit? Seemed to think it was more of an alignment issue.
No, I just think not as much. Just basically, you know, I came out here last week and I said, hey, listen, we're going to work on these walkthroughs, you know what I'm saying, and work on not necessarily assignments, but, hey, alignment technique, you know, and then assignment. You know, a lot of times we weren't where we needed to be or technique-wise, either getting push on the line of scrimmage of a team that we knew was penetrating or an alignment-wise when they broke the huddle to be, you know, where we needed to be from an alignment standpoint. So that's where it is.
And that's, again, who does – ultimately, I know it's being coached. You're coached like we're in this defense is where you line up. I mean, that's basic ABC stuff. Is it Miles Jack's responsibility as the kind of the captain of the defense to make sure everybody's to a certain extent,
you know, to communicate with the defense as well as Bear Church and Sean Gibson? I mean, safety is the core of the defense. Those guys in the middle are supposed to make sure that everything kind of works out smoothly together. But there also becomes a point where the responsibility falls on the ones that are on the outside to make sure that they understand it, that they don't have to rely on somebody else. Say, hey, let me hold your hand to guide you to the dinner table because you're going to have an apple to eat dinner.
It seems, Logs, that with so many guys back – from last year, playing under the same defense coordinator.
Easy, right?
Right. It should be at least not this widespread. Occasionally, you're going to have a mental bust.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just life.
You know, a perfect example of what was an excusable error in that game as far as the open coverages, the play-action pass to Jack Doyle that obviously Tashawn Gibson talked in the locker room yesterday, and he owned up to that one particular play. That's okay. I mean, look, it's play-action. You bite up, you don't end up taking on Jack Doyle or blowing him up in the hole. He escapes out for a pass. That happens. They win sometimes. They win individual plays. But the plays that they win because you're not even in the right defense as an individual, that's a problem. So I think there's two different categories to that. It's okay to get beat every once in a while, and there's going to be plays that you've got a great player that makes a great play. Those are okay, and that happens enough. But so that the plays that where they beat you physically, or they have a play that maybe it's a great design and it catches you off guard, that's okay. But you can't give them the easy stuff to where you're screwing up a fundamental defense. I mean, basic fundamental defense, and there's no excuse that you can't blame it on anybody else, but own it yourself. That's a problem.
Yeah, and head coach Doug Marrone continuing along those same kind of lines yesterday at his Monday press conference. Look, it's a question that we're getting from fans right now. Are guys deciding basically to go rogue on this defense right now and willfully freelancing?
No. I mean, talking to the players, I mean, they're trying to get it. We got to, you know, help them clear it, you know, figure out, you know, why is there any confusion on that one? Hey, we got to do a good job during the week of making sure the splits, you know, what routes they run out of, what splits, where we've done a hell of a job before with. We've got to make sure that that's communicated and known. And, you know, the problem is if you make a mistake, let's get it corrected and let's go on. Let's not push and try to get ourselves out of it. One mistake and when you push leads to another mistake and another mistake. And that seems to be in my conversations with the players, you know, what happens. They make a mistake. They try to make up for it. They just need to go ahead the next play and do their job.
Well, how does that jibe with what you're seeing on film?
Well, I think that works, I think, that does apply, I think, when a team is struggling. It goes back to the old thing, trying to do too much. And I think maybe the play that I was referring to about Miles Jack on that third and 14 is probably an example of trying to do too much. You know, he's lined up in the middle, and he's like, I don't want to go make a play.
Make the big play,
I'm going to go and make that tackle in the flat. He's leaning that way, and then I leave my spot, and then Andrew Luck exposes me because I leave my zone. I think that's probably an example of trying to do too much because you're trying to make something happen. But that's a dangerous area to approach or to get into as a player because then you start to just make one error, have another error, and then it just looks like junk.
We knew going into the game it's going to be tough to get to Andrew Luck. He hadn't been sacked in 3 weeks. Make that four now. Has only been sacked 10 times on the season. But was the defensive line getting push in this game?
No.
Not at all.
No.
So they only hit him, what, twice?
No. I mean, it was Andrew Luck was clean. You know, if they were.
Oh, playing. I know he was. I didn't know if he was getting it out quick or.
No. I thought he. First of all, give credit to the Colts. I mean, what an amazing transformation that they have undertaken in 1 year with that offensive line, because last year they were a sieve. 10 sacks. What was it, the second game that the Jaguars faced the Colts?
No, it's the right. First one up there.
Was that
I
the
thought.
First one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was up there, yeah.
And then how many did they have here?
Four the second time.
So 14 sacks in two games.
They haven't given that up in nine.
I mean, yeah, that's incredible. And I think you give credit to a couple areas. One is that the personnel that they've been able to bring in, because the addition of Quentin Nelson has been a big help. He's a good football player. Kelly's playing better at center. Costanzo's back now playing for them. But, you know, they've had multiple injuries along the offensive line. They started the year out with Joe Haig, who was a guard tackle in years past for the Colts, and a young player that was pushed into playing, done a pretty good job. Well, he's hurt, so now they have a rookie playing right tackle in Braden Smith, who is essentially a guard, but he's doing an admirable job. They started the year out with Matt Slauson at right guard. He gets hurt, and they have another guy that steps in, Glowinski, that's doing a pretty good job. I mean, give credit. They're doing a great job, I think, protecting Andrew Luck. And Andrew Luck, I think this is the most comfortable pocket he's ever had in his career.
Probably so.
By far. And it's not even close. And so give them credit. The Jaguars' defensive front, essentially, even at times, you go, okay, well, some games you say, okay, a guy was close. If you just get a little more coverage, you know, that's a sack. There wasn't a whole lot of plays like that in this game. You go back and you watch the film, you go, okay, how was Yannick doing? He didn't get much done. Calais didn't get much done. Malik, I thought, might have had one of his, I don't want to say his worst game, but wasn't very effective in that game at all. Got pushed around a lot. In fact, got drove off the ball on some double teams that didn't look very good. So not a good performance overall. I thought the two guys that I thought that played well up front, but it was against the run, was Calais, who made some monster plays in that game against the run, and then Avery Jones with the limited snaps that he got. Very productive player.
Yeah.
Very productive player. But as pass rushers, nobody was effective.
All right, bottom of the hour, let's step aside here. We'll open up the phone lines if you want to get in at 641-1010. Likewise, we'll check in on the text line driven by Duval 4. You can submit your questions via social media as well. For Jeff Logman, looking back on the Jaguars' loss to the Indianapolis Colts from Sunday, and we'll start to look ahead as well to the Pittsburgh Steelers coming in this upcoming Sunday afternoon. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Logman here with you. Jaguars Today, live at the Bank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Malik Jackson, and you're listening to the only weekday show dedicated to your Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I've always been comfortable with Rashad. I think that, you know, he's worked hard. He was, when we first got here and I was an assistant, he was, you know, really doing well. And then he went out there and we targeted him some and didn't play as well as we expected. And, you know, then injuries came along. So he's worked extremely hard through all that to come back. So, you know, he's someone that I trust and Keenan trust and, you know, obviously Nate trust if he's in the game.
You still trust him would be the question. Rashad Greene fumbled in a key situation. He's never done a whole lot as a receiver here.
No.
You know, he's been on and off the roster several times this year.
Good or bad, you know, so it wasn't like you go – it's not like you're putting Keelan Cole out there and then he fumbles again to where you go, God, what is he doing out there? He just fumbled against the Eagles. Why? You know, so Rashad's never had that issue. So I don't blame the coaching staff for having him out there. I mean, you've you've got to throw to open guys, and sometimes you're third or fourth receiver or fifth receiver sometimes has to play.
Was Keelan on the field for that snap?
I'm not even sure, Tony.
Was that Keelan's role, I wonder, on that play, and Rashad was in there for him?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at it. But I do know that Keelan's role significantly was reduced. And
right.
When he was on the field, you could tell that Blake didn't seem to have a lot of confidence to continue to look his way, which is understandable. I think as a wide receiver, when you put it on the floor or you drop balls that the quarterback is thrown to you, you've got to earn his trust back, and you've got to earn the trust of the coaching staff as well, and that's why I think his reps were reduced. And when he was on the field, we're talking about Keelan Cole here, that the confidence that Blake had in him was very apparent that it wasn't at the level that it has been in the past.
Yeah, you look back, Rashad had this issue when it came to punt returns. I mean, in 2016, he had 21 punt returns and 5 receptions, 26 touches, fumble 4 times.
Yeah.
And 26 touches. That's a high percentage.
Going back to what year?
2016.
Yeah.
Because he didn't play last year.
Yeah, and I think, when you have for the most part, a new staff and new structure, you have a tendency to trust what you've seen so far. And so I'm sure that those guys are going, okay, what's in the past is in the past. I'm sure they're not thinking in their mind, well, back to 2016.
No, I hear you.
As a general manager and as a personnel guy, then maybe you should be looking at that to determine whether he's on your roster or not.
No, I agree. I mean, I think when you look, he's had 6 fumbles in his career. He's caught 27 passes in that time. Now, again, some of those, I don't know if that's differentiated between fumbles versus muff punts, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hasn't had, he's had another 40-odd touches in the punt return game. So, yeah. It's not a high volume of touches.
I know muffs were an issue, so I don't know if that's going to the category of
it may be. It may be. That's how they break it up on here. I can't get
that's kind of why he lost that job as a punt returner a few years back.
Right. Exactly. All right. Let's go to the phone lines for the first time this morning. It's 641-1010. We got Dez checking in from the south side. Good morning, Dez. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Jeff, help me out on this one because I'm a little bit confused. You go to Cleveland, you give up a 5th-round draft pick for a pretty productive back, had 4 touchdowns in Cleveland this year, the first 3 weeks. You go to England, you give him 3 touches. You take the bye week. What do you have Sunday, 4 or 5?
Yeah, it was pretty limited.
The one you throw out of the backfield, Blake didn't even come close to him. I can't remember if his hand was hit or what the situation was, but he didn't even come close to him out of the backfield. And I don't understand what the purpose of going after Carlos Hyde was, other than to build your stock in your stable, or what was it?
Well, I think first and foremost, the uncertainty with Leonard Fournette is when he was going to get back. And he had more carries than what you stated in London. I think he had like 6 carries.
Total of 6, yeah.
In the first half, mostly all of them were. And I get, like I said, after that game, I get it. I mean, the running game was ineffective in the first half, so you got to do something different if something's not working in the first half. And so they decided to throw the ball. I was okay with that. Now, why would you give up a 5th-round pick for a guy that you're saying, and I think I get your point here, is he's not contributing. I get that, but here's the thing. The uncertainty with Leonard Fournette and his hamstring and the way that this offense is designed, which is run the football, pound the football, play action pass, they were screwed without him, without having a backup or an alternative to Leonard Fournette, if, in fact, Leonard Fournette wasn't able to get back and play. And to be healthy. So I don't have a problem with them giving up a 5th-round pick. We're talking about a marginal pick that most years 5th-round picks don't even make football clubs in a lot of cases. If you hit on a 5th-round pick, you feel very, very fortunate. So it wasn't like the price tag was high to gain what is essentially an insurance policy. And the insurance policy, by the way, is a top 10 back. Carlos Hyde is a top 10 back if you look at the numbers ballpark. Wouldn't he say, yeah. I mean, you're a fantasy guy. Is he a top 10 back?
He's in the second 10.
Okay, second maybe. 10. So, I mean, let's say he's an average back, a middle-of-the-road back. I mean, 5th-round pick, wouldn't you kind of give a 5th-round pick up for, a middle-of-the-road back who's got experience and who's still young and doesn't cost a lot of money?
Well, I mean, not cheap though, Jeff. I mean, he's on the books next
$5 million a year,
right?
I mean, $15 million, you know, over 3 years is what he signed to go to Cleveland, and that's not a crazy expensive contract, given that you have your other running back is on a rookie contract, which is not cheap because
Understood.
He's a third overall pick, but he's on a rookie.
When
deal.
You're right now, you're projected to be the team that's most over the cap heading into 2019. Now, I understand they can, you know, redo contracts and things like that, but where they currently stand, they're projected to be in the worst cap situation of any team in the National Football League. I don't think it's cheap for a backup running back if he's not going to get a lot of volume.
But if that's now, I get the point about volume, if he's not going to get a lot of volume. But the question is that he might have gotten a lot of volume.
Understood. And that's the thing. Are you paying for an insurance policy more than you're paying for a guy that you plan to use? If things are in a perfect world, everyone's healthy, are we going to see more of this kind of workload distribution that we saw this week? Leonard Fournette carries it 24 times. Carlos Hyde carries it 3. Is it that stark of a ratio? Or do you think
after watching Leonard Fournette on some plays leave yardage out there, then no. I'm going to tilt it more in the favor of, okay, Leonard Fournette's going to get 15 touches, and then Carlos Hyde is going to get 12 touches.
Yeah.
I mean, because – and then you kind of go in the future based on, okay, which guy's more productive, you go with the hot hand. I mean, the reality is that Leonard Fournette has done nothing to establish himself that he is the guy that should get all the carry yet. He hasn't.
They certainly feel that. Well, I mean, they treated him like that guy.
I think that their hope was that if they gave him the ball as many times as they did, that he would pop and then get the production like you had last year early in the season where, bam, you get an explosive play. And they were there. He just didn't pop them. So now that he hasn't popped them or hasn't taken advantage of those plays in that situation, then – I think you look at it and you go, you know what? Well, now we've got to get Carlos Hyde some more touches. And I think that the situation can be healthy because now you can create somewhat of a competitive environment for two guys that are kind of fighting for touches here. And so whoever's playing better, they get the ball.
Dez, thank you for the call, 641-1010. If you'd like to get in as well on the phone lines or the text line driven by Duval Ford at the same number.
Let me just kind of circle back on it to reemphasize the one point. The offense, the way it's designed, is a power running football team, even though they never really established it this year. That was the objective, I think, going into the season, was to be a power running football team. And then the injuries to tight end, to the offensive line with Cam Robinson, has kind of detoured the offense away from what it really wanted to be initially. Well, now you've got Koyak back in the lineup, and you've gotten rid of a tight end and David Greenidge, who I have no idea why he was on the active roster. Big guy that can't block. That doesn't work. And so now you're going back to Koyak, who was probably your second-best inline blocker that you had in training camps. Now you're going back to that tight end that fit the mold of what you wanted to be. Now you have a backup running back who fit the mold of what you wanted to be in case a hamstring didn't heal. So now you're trying to get back to what you were, what you wanted to be on offense. And so I have no problem with them giving up a fifth for Carlos Hyde. I have some issues with some of the personnel decisions that they did going into training camp with the running back and the tight end position. But I think they have done a pretty good job of trying to get back to where they want to be.
Did they like going into the training camp at tight end? Seemed like they had plenty of options.
Yeah,
there.
But I had a big problem with them releasing Mercedes Lewis. If you're going to be a power running football team, why would you let a guy that costs you a minimal amount go, who arguably was your best blocking tight end on the roster? Period. I mean, if Austin Seferian Jenkins came in here and was a great blocking tight end, and you had another young pup that you were going to develop into that type of a blocker, I get it. But there were no young up-and-comers that were going to fit that role for Mercedes Lewis. So why wouldn't you keep a guy that's what he does best and that's what you want
cost,
to have?
I guess. I mean.
Well, I mean,
that you're asking the question. I mean, I got to believe that's the reason.
I get it, but I mean, $2 million? I mean, $2 million is,
two or three? I think.
Two.
Was it?
Yeah, it's paltry. I mean, $2 million is paltry when you're talking about that situation. So essentially what you did is you kept Koyak, Niles Paul, James O'Shaughnessy over. And look, I get that some guys are going to be better in other situations, but James O'Shaughnessy was not an inline blocker. Niles Paul was certainly not an inline blocker. So the only inline blocker that you really had on your roster was Austin Seferian Jenkins, who was a very good blocker, But why wouldn't you want to have two?
We all asked the same question there, and a lot of us were asking it at running back, too. Well, like, why wouldn't you keep another guy that could give you some semblance of a power game behind Fournette?
And let me take you guys back to training camp. Who wowed you besides your starters at the running back position?
Nobody.
Did anybody impress you?
No.
No.
At running back?
No.
Yeah.
I thought T.J. Yeldon looked good in the
No. I mean, besides the guys that you knew that were probably going to be on the roster.
Oh, okay.
Talking Leonard Fournette, T.J. Yeldon, and Corey Grant. And did anybody else make you go, wow, man, that guy kind of looks impressive in
nope.
the game?
No.
Yeah. I mean, so we had the opportunity over the last couple of years to be in camp with the Patriots, and we got to watch them practice together. Same thing with the Minnesota Vikings. And you look at some of their depth at that back position, and you're talking about, and I go back again to the importance of that position with the philosophy that you were going to have going forward with a quarterback that you know is not a carry the weight of the offense quarterback. So the importance of the running game is incredibly high. I didn't think they did a very good job of bringing in more competition or taking a look at guys that were just different at that running back position. They brought essentially a couple guys back that they'd already had around. And did they impress you the last year? No.
All right, got a quick one here on the text line. Switching gears a little bit here. We're talking about communication on defense. Somebody wants to know, like, what's a sample defensive play call sound like? He said, you know, we're all used to hearing offensive play calls and how complicated they can be, you know, references Gruden, Spider 2, Y Banana, and all that stuff. But is it as simple as saying cover three, or like how?
Yeah, it's very simple compared to offenses. And a lot of defenses will go through the whole thing. It'll be front check or fronts and coverage. So under one, under zero, under one Y, over two. I mean, that's basically that's the entirety of a call, over two, or over 2E. I mean, that might be an entire call.
So that seems like that should be communicated perfectly every time.
Yeah, I mean,
whereas
it's not as simple as that, because there are certain coverages that they adjust with formations, emotions, et cetera, like that. But for the most part, I mean, it's not that hard. It's really not that hard.
So it comes down to guys not doing what they're responsible for doing in that particular called defense.
Exactly. And not being aware for whatever reason. And that's the part that, you know, I can't explain. Why a player, you know, and what we're talking about here, Barry Church on the one touchdown or Jalen Ramsey on those two plays, why are they doing something different than everybody else, or why are they not aware of what the call is? I can't explain that, and but I can explain it like this. It's on the player. It's on the individual. Because if he's not aware of what he's supposed to do, he needs to find out, you know, eye contact with teammates, you know, figure things out. So when you line up, assignment is the last thing you're thinking of, because that is an understood proposition.
Right.
That's a given.
All right, he is Jeff Logman along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey, Jaguars Today on a Check the Tape Tuesday, 641-1010 if you'd like to get in on the phone line or the text line. Driven by Duval Ford, hit us up on social media with your questions for Logs as well, and we'll get those resolved here as we look back on the Jags falling to the Colts for their fifth consecutive loss of the season, 29-26 this past Sunday. We'll come back with this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, got a couple of quick ones on this date in football history. Go back to 2005. Chicago Bears cornerback Nathan Basher returned a missed field goal for 108 yards for a touchdown, and that at the time the longest play in NFL history, since surpassed by Antonio Cromartie's 109-yard return in 2007, although not on this exact date. Famous birthdays for this date, really only one I dug up today, and that was Vinny Testaverde, born in this date in 1963, 55 years old today. Vinny was the first overall pick in the 1987 NFL draft, a two-time Pro Bowler, 13th all-time in passing yards, over 46,000, and 16th in touchdown passes with 275. The legend was he was colorblind. and that they put up a billboard in Tampa with red background with green lettering that simply said, Vinny can't read this, and to explain why he was throwing all these interceptions, so says the legend over the years.
We had a saying with Vinny, give him time, he'll screw it up.
Yeah. You know what they say? Parcells said if you watched, if Testaverde had, you know, a body that was more mobile, he played until he was like 40. He said if you watched him in practice at the age of 40, just throwing the football, you think he was the best quarterback in the National Football League, just in terms of how pretty a ball he could throw, yeah, even at that age, you know. Mm-hmm. But that it didn't always end up going exactly where he intended it to, and he had, by that time, no mobility.
Okay, you guys remember when Vinny Testaverde broke Joel Schmange's jaw?
No.
I don't know.
He did. He broke his jaw.
How'd he do that? Hit him with a football?
No. He actually, Schmange was tackling him from behind, and the heel of his foot hit him under the chin.
Oh.
And broke his jaw, and Schmange was eating liquid with his mouth wired shut for a couple weeks and still played.
How about that?
Broken jaw.
Tough guy.
Yeah, I'm right.
Joel Schmange.
Back in the Toradol days.
Yeah, exactly. A little Toradol of the chin. We'll straighten you right out. All right, that collectively was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
It didn't take long for former Cleveland Browns head coach Hugh Jackson to find another job. Jackson was hired by the Cincinnati Bengals yesterday as a special assistant to the head coach. The Bengals fired defensive coordinator Terrell Austin on Monday. Head coach Marvin Lewis, when announcing the move yesterday to bring in Jackson, said, quote, I have a great comfort level with Hugh and his ability to assist me with the day-to-day responsibilities on defense, including analyzing our opponents and helping me on game days with the players and defensive coaches. The Buffalo Bills have released Jacksonville native Nathan Peterman after starting Matt Barkley in their blowout win over the New York Jets on Sunday. Peterman, 1-3 as a starter with the Bills in his 2 years, throwing 3 touchdowns and 12 interceptions during his time there. The move, probably also a good indication that rookie quarterback Josh Allen is close to being able to return. For Buffalo, the Carolina Panthers have released running back C.J. Anderson. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have released kicker Chandler Catanzaro and signed kicker Cairo Santos to replace him. Los Angeles Chargers linebacker Denzel Perryman has an LCL injury and a hamstring injury that could require surgery. The team is placing him on injured reserve, ending his season. And today at 4 o'clock is the deadline for Le'Veon Bell to report to the Steelers, and all expectations are still that he will not be reporting to the team, meaning that he will not be eligible to play for the remainder of the 2018 season.
Amen. We can just finally stop talking about it. You know, one way or the other. I don't care if you come back or don't come back. He's not playing this week regardless.
No.
Just be done with it. One on the text line here, kind of going back to, you know, what – the Jags failed to do to beef up the running back core this offseason. You know, why didn't we pursue Jeremy Hill and or even sign Carlos Hyde in the offseason? I mean, you could get into specific guys. I think the bottom line, they should have added somebody. I thought they would draft somebody.
Yeah,
honestly.
Draft or undrafted free agents.
Right. I mean, Jeremy Hill, by the way, I looked. He signed way back in the middle of March with New England. So he wasn't sitting out there for very long. And if he, of course, what did he tear, an Achilles, Tony?
Something
like that. I mean, he's done for the year after. Oh, was it a knee?
It was a bad knee injury.
Yeah, and look, Jeremy Hill hadn't, since his rookie year, done much of anything, honestly. And he was buried on the New England depth chart for most of the offseason. But regardless, I mean, Carlos Hyde, I don't think the Jags were in the market at the time to think, look, we just – got Leonard Fournette drafted last year, right? And he played in 13 games. One of those was a suspension, so he only missed 2 games. He did show some explosive playmaking ability at times. Do we want to go out and sign Carlos Hyde to a 3-year, $15 million contract? I think a lot of people would have been scratching their head at the time. Well, what are you doing this for?
Now, right? should have found another way to do
sure,
that.
Sure, but that seemed like at that time that was more that was starter money in the National Football League. Not all these running backs are going to get Todd Gurley-type contracts. I mean, that was clearly starter money. You look at Jerick McKinnon, for instance, out in San Francisco. When he signed for an average of $7.5 million a year. When he signed that contract, he was the fourth highest paid running back in the league. So 3 years, $15 million is not chump change when it comes to the running back position.
No, it's not. You know? It's not. But it's for what you are, though, as an offense, I think that's worth every penny.
We'll find out
going
forward. That's what I mean. Look, they could at any point get out of Carlos Hyde's contract simply by letting him go. There's no dead money in the future, but
that's correct.
$4.75 million next
year. Which is the great thing about it, because there is no. I mean, the Cleveland Browns gave him all the upfront money, so it's a very low risk proposition to trade for him, and you lose a fifth round pick. Which, you'd like to have a fifth round pick, but. What's the difference between a fifth-round pick and an undrafted guy? Is it all that great?
Yeah. Telvin Smith, Malik Jackson, several. I mean, you can get some good players in the fifth round.
Yeah, but it's not a whole lot.
No, but it happens from time to time.
Sure.
We'll see.
It happens from time to time with undrafted guys, too. I mean, look at the Jaguars roster. I mean, there's undrafted guys throughout that roster.
Oh, sure.
But, so you can do it the same way.
Right, you can. But, I mean, I think, obviously, you'd rather have a fifth-round pick than relying on, an undrafted guy. Because if you like him, you could just...
Well, the big reason why you'd like to have the fifth-round pick is that when you're getting undrafted guys, you're competing with the market.
And when you're in the
fifth-round pick, you're
in the middle of the second round and you want to be at the top of the second round.
Yeah, you can move up.
It's
draft capital.
Sure. All right, moving on from that, somebody on the text line says, if the Lambeau kick wasn't blocked, we could have won that game because we probably would have run at the end of the game. We wouldn't have fumbled. Crazy how that one play changed the game. Maybe, maybe not. There's still time. I don't think they were in, panic mode. You know what I mean? I thought they were methodically moving it down the field. And, certainly that exact play wouldn't have happened. But who's to say if on the next carry Leonard Fournette doesn't cough it up? You know what I mean?
And maybe that play still happens. You don't know.
You don't know. You
but,
don't know.
The blocked field goal was unfortunate. Because Josh Lambeau is having a Pro Bowl caliber year.
Yeah.
And then to have a blocked extra point on your resume kind of takes away from your Pro Bowl resume, so to speak. And then having the 52-yarder no good, what a tremendous job he's done.
It's hard to find fault with him, right?
24 consecutive field goals, and he's only missed two field goals since becoming a Jaguar.
Right.
It's crazy.
So, I mean, look, the guy's allowed to miss on occasion.
Sure.
Particularly in a game like that when the offense was moving, it wasn't like – that 9-6 game versus Tennessee where you felt, even though it was a 3-point margin at the end, this one didn't feel like Lambeau let them down, at least to me.
It didn't,
as far as that goes. All right, we'll take a timeout here. When we return in the moment, we'll get more of your questions as submitted on social media this morning. Hit us up on Twitter, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, of course, on the text line driven by Duval Ford, or the phone line at the same number, 641-1010. With Tony Smith and Jeff Loggeman, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today live at the bank on 1010XL and 92.5. FM.
This is former Jaguar running back and season 24 Dancing with the Stars champion Rashad Jennings, and you are listening to Jags Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
There's a couple things I really liked, you got to kind of, in the run game, I thought he did some good things. Pass pro wise, I knew his, once I found out his knee was bothering him, then, it's kind of tough to evaluate, but we were happy to get him in there and, Josh's foot, So, both those guys right now, we'll just see where they are. I expect them to be out there on Wednesday, but, we'll just see.
That is head coach Doug Marrone talking about Ereck Flowers getting a little playing time in this week's game and hopeful to have him out there on Wednesday. As he mentioned, Josh Walker, who I'm almost positive I called Josh Wagner yesterday. It's one of my producers at Sirius. Almost 100%. It stuck in my head the whole ride home. I'm like, did I call Josh Walker Wagner?
I called Brandon Linder, Ereck Linder in the game. I corrected myself.
Ereck Linder is
like. Isn't he a skater? The Olympic skater?
Was he the.
Where did
Ereck, I'm thinking Ereck Lindros was the.
No,
the,
you know who it is?
I know who you're talking about from the NHL, 1980. Yeah. Ereck Heiden was the skater.
Okay. So Ereck Linder, I think, was because, every time you say a name like that, it comes from somewhere in your past.
Right.
And I think there was an outside linebacker that I played in an all-star game with out of Boston College, and I think his name was Ereck Linder. Tony, search that and see if
you
I'm
sure
correct.
You don't know that his name's not Ereck, Jeff? Yes, that's the first thing I think of. Like, oh, man. I'm hosting a show called Jaguars Today. It is called the left tackle by the wrong name. You know?
Ereck, if I remember correctly, Ereck Linder was a marvelous linebacker at Boston College and had a pretty significant knee injury that kind of dropped him down and as far as draft stock goes. But when I said it, I was like, did I just say – I meant Brandon Linder.
Right, and sometimes you're like – even in your head, you're like, that sounds wrong. Why does that sound wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could, because part of your brain says, no, that's right. That's a real connection that you make.
Yeah.
We're getting older, Jeff, apparently.
Yes. anything on it?
I can't find anything. I see a former assemblyman in Riverside County. I see a local baseball player named Eric Linder.
Here in Jacksonville?
Who's playing at Nice, yeah.
Congratulations, Eric Linder, for making the program today.
I don't know where
I just searched Eric Linder football, and I'm not getting much.
All right. Eric Linder, Boston College.
Okay.
Okay. We'll work out. In the meantime, as he works on that, I know it wasn't an extended look, but Eric Flowers, did he catch your eye positively or negatively?
Well, I think that the limited snaps that he had, I thought he gave great effort. And which there was one particular run play where he gets a piece of a linebacker that ends up springing a running back for a few extra yards, and I thought the effort was tremendous. The thing that I think you would still like to see more with him is just more knee bend, and that was always kind of his issue. I don't say kind of was his issue with the New York Giants, and that the knee bend athleticism weren't really what at the level that you wanted to see it at. But, I mean, he gave great effort, and he had good length, and you know, I mean, limited number of snaps, though. I mean,
no,
for an
understood.
Offensive lineman, you'd like to see him for, you know, 40 snaps or more for a whole game. And I don't know what the snap count was, but it wasn't a whole lot because once he went off to the sideline with that knee issue,
right.
He's pretty much on the shelf.
It seems like, though, Jeff, like they had gotten to the point where they're comfortable putting him in, obviously, right, and that he had learned enough about the protections or what have you that they felt like he wasn't going to get Blake killed. So maybe it was leaning towards him if he gave a good showing, maybe kind of, you know, working his way into that spot.
I think that's exactly what that was. And the reports before the game, and I don't remember who came out with the report, but the report said that he was going to start the game, and obviously that we disputed and said that wasn't going to happen prior to the game. And we knew that Eric Flowers was going to come in about the third series and that he would roll in, and the comment was made to me that – he will play more dependent upon how he does, because they felt that throughout the course of the games with Josh Walker at left tackle, he would, I don't want to say wear down, but eventually they would figure him out and that he would give up some pressures late in the ball game. So this was kind of a test. Let's see if Eric Flowers can do one of two things. One, show us that he can be the left tackle, or number two, at least we're keeping Josh Walker so that at the end of the game he's not giving up those kind of things. So I think it was kind of twofold.
Maybe we'll get another piece of the Giants offensive line. Who knows, right? We got Brandon Leonard going to IR, so Shatley moves into the starting lineup, so that opens a reserve spot up on the interior. Could Patrick Omame be an option here based on what you saw from him last year? Would he be a solid a reserve for this football team?
I don't think that happens. I think that they like what they have right now with this roster, and they also have a guy on the practice squad that I think they feel pretty good about. He's the offensive lineman that they got from the University of Miami that actually did some really nice things in the preseason. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go that route with, you know, the offensive lineman quicker than they would bringing back a Patrick Omame.
Yeah, they got a couple actually on the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
You got Casey McDermott, who you're talking about, was Miami.
Yeah, did a
kid.
Good job in the preseason.
Yep, 6'6", 311 pounds, so he's a massive dude. And Brandon Thomas out of Clemson, who's 6'3", 317. So a couple of big boys.
Yeah, and I think McDermott could probably play some tackle if he had to, but he got a lot of guard activity mostly in the preseason.
Is this a unit that, you know, it's we talk about takeaways on Monday. What are your takeaways from the game? And somebody suggested my top takeaway is they need to spend two early draft picks on offensive linemen next year. Is this a unit that, now granted, Jeremy Parnell's getting up there a little bit in age, but let's assume Leonard comes back healthy, right, next offseason. And you've got Norwell, who you just paid a lot of money to. You got Cam, potentially, hopefully coming back healthy. AJ Cann, where he falls in the mix. Is this a unit you could see them spending some early draft capital on?
They could. They could. Very well could. I think that also, though, you're going to have to look at some of that early draft capital, but maybe replacing some of the components that you're going to have to lose because of salary cap issues.
Right.
Then the problem, I think, with that is that you've spent some draft capital in those areas already, but do you feel good about that they're going to pay dividends?
Taven Bryan, I mean, Smoot, those guys, right?
I hate to say it, but did you notice anything special or that Taven Bryan did in the game?
Yet to notice really anything special.
Nope. The only thing I remember from Taven Bryan is right before the game started, he was screaming. I think it was like its pregame ritual. Okay. The camera panned past him. I was like, that's pretty intense.
Okay.
And then nothing after that.
How about Smoot?
No.
You're talking about first and third round picks. And I know, I get it, it's his first game action back, but I mean, you're talking about a first and a third round pick.
Yeah, I can remember him chasing down a play from behind that
yeah,
felt like
he
was
got
probably
blocked.
Good.
He got blocked before he could make the tackle, and then he gets up and he's all fired up. And I think it's Telvin gives him five. Yep. Like, hey, Matt, it's a great play you made there. Well, he didn't make the play because he got blocked before you got there.
Gotcha. All right, let's go to the phones. Welcome, Scott, checking in from downtown. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. How about yourself?
Doing all right. What's on your mind today?
Good. Jeff, I'm just wondering if you could shine a little light on what has to happen during the week to manifest itself in so many consecutive slow starts. I understand bad coaching or the coaching needs to be better, but what specifically is happening or not happening that could cause a team to look like how this team has looked in the first half so many weeks in a row?
That's a great question, and honestly, I don't know the answer to that. Yeah, is there a magic, I don't want to say magic formula, but is there something that you do that's unique that helps a team get off to a fast start? I don't think there is. And is it something that the coaches put in your mind and they emphasize by having practices, you know, certain periods that maybe are at the beginning of practice to emphasize the importance of starting fast? I don't know. I mean, it's amazing to me that sometimes, and I played on football teams before where we started fast, that we started slow, and we did the same daggum thing. You know, so sometimes it's just unexplainable. But I do know this. This football team is vastly different when they start fast. Whether they get an early score on offense or you get an early takeaway on defense, that when the energy is created by this football team, and we know this from a fact that have they ever relinquished a lead yet this year and last year? I don't think they have.
This year they did.
This year they did the one time.
In Philly, right.
Against
small
the Eagles. But, I mean, other than that, they pretty much, once they've got a lead, they've been tremendous. And the numbers with Doug Marrone don't lie. When they have a lead coming out or going in the halftime, they're like undefeated for the rest of the game. I mean, that's unbelievable. So I don't think there's one thing you can point to. Magic potions to doing that. But when you're struggling and you're losing consecutive games, though, it's hard to find the energy to start fast, and it's very difficult, but it's a mind game you have to fight.
All right, Scott, thank you for the call. Let's head out to Ponte Vedra. Ken is next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was going to ask about the impact of our draft picks, but you kind of covered that a few minutes ago. So instead I'll ask about, I think Telvin Smith and Miles Jack are so similar in talents that there's something. I think you need diversity in your linebackers. I don't think either one of them, well, Miles Jack is strong enough to be the middle linebacker. And I think one of them has to go, or they have to change the strength. Trust me.
I think these guys, both of these linebackers are immensely talented. And when you say that they have similar traits or characteristics, that is, I mean, if you're looking at it from a talent standpoint, that's a positive. I mean, they're fast. They're incredibly quick. They have great hand-eye coordination. They both are involved in making game-changing plays when it comes to whether it be interceptions or fumble recoveries, cause fumbles. They're very active in those categories for the most part now. And we're not saying that they're playing at a high level now, but it's very rare that one team has two linebackers that have the speed of these two guys. And it's a luxury. That's not a negative. Trust me, it's not a negative to have two linebackers that have the speed that they do or the traits that they have. Teams would love to have two linebackers with those physical characteristics of these two guys. But the fact is that they just need to get better production out of these two guys. And look, Telvin had – I said this last 2 weeks ago that he had his worst game as a pro against the Philadelphia Eagles. But look, last year Telvin was playing at an unbelievable level. He needs to get more back to that. Miles Jack played at a pretty high level last year. I don't want to say an unbelievable level because he hasn't been there yet. But he's the one, I think, that him and Telvin can change the way that this defense performs because they're the communicators. The linebackers are always the heart of a defense. They're the ones that kind of, quote-unquote, rally the troops. And I think it's imperative that these two guys be on top of their game to allow everybody else to be on the top of their game for the remainder of the season.
If I understand what Ken, I think, was trying to get to in part was that, you know, Telvin's a smaller athletic linebacker. He started to question, is Miles Jack big enough, physical enough, in your opinion, to handle
I think Miles is definitely much more physical than Telvin. Now, what the play that he did the other day on the personal foul call, I mean, that's not the kind of physical element that you want to bring. Now, I think he's very fortunate that he didn't get ejected.
Oh, inexplicable. Like, in that circumstance, there was not a bang-bang play.
No, that was plenty of time, plenty of thought that can go into that play. And everything about what he did, and look, that's the way the game used to be played, and when it was played like that, trust me, I was involved in it. I loved it. But the way that the game is now, the rules are different. Everything that he did had all the classic examples of that's not allowed. Leading with the forearm, dropping the crown of the helmet, and launching his body. The three characteristics that can get you ejected, he's lucky he played it.
And then making contact in the ear hole on top. There's a quadfecta for you. Ken, thank you for the call. We'll take a timeout here, come back, get more of your questions in for Jeff Loggeman before we get out of here today, and look ahead a little bit to how Jeff thinks this team may match up with the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday at 1 o'clock here at TIAA Bank Field. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Loggeman here with you, Jaguars Today, on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go down the home stretch. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Loggeman here with you. Jaguars Today, Check the Tape Tuesday. Osh will be in tomorrow. We'll preview the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll get your thoughts on that game coming up in a moment here, Jeff. Got a few more in. I want to get to you on the text line here with reading these as they come in. Curious, based off of Unique's lack of production this year, will he still demand the same money everybody thought he would be due? I hope not. What's your response?
Well, I mean, look, this past game wasn't his best game, but then if you look at different companies that do the statistical analysis and the number of pressures that I see with the eye test, I think he's been doing a good job of generating pressure. And then this year has also been a bit of an adjustment for him because teams are definitely aware of him as a player and are utilizing the backs to chip on him, which last year he didn't get. You know, he was one of those players that they didn't really recognize, okay, we need to be aware of him. At times they would chip him, but not as much as this year. This year, out of the gate, teams were saying, we're going to block him. He's the threat we have to worry about.
Is he worth a big money extension for the Jaguars?
Well, I think he's still got some, you know, some areas to prove. I mean, the great players that get extensions that are highly paid, they do it even when they get double teams. You know, the numbers still kind of ended up getting there. And I think that he will get there as far as learning to adjust with that. And I think he's still got a skill set that is tremendous. I love his work ethic. I love the way he has the ability to focus. There's some things, I think, maturity things that he still needs to kind of grow up with. But that's typical for a younger player. But I love everything that he's about. Love the way he has the ability to pass rush. I think they've got to do a better job with him, though, of kind of letting him focus in with his hand in the ground as a right defensive end more. You know, they're standing him up and doing what I consider was just what I call the spinner package, where they've got three down and he's kind of a roaming force and can come from anywhere. And then he lines up on the left side, which is, you know, sometimes that's the design of the defense where they get Calais on the bubble side, so to speak, and he's an inside end. But there's got to be
What's the bubble side?
Bubble side is typically if you have a nose tackle and what they call the big defensive end, they are typically married together. Most of the time, the smaller defensive end is with the three technique defensive tackle, It gives him more one-on-ones. It gets him the ability to be more on space. And I think they've got to do a better job of finding ways to keep him on the right side, because that's where he's most comfortable at as a pass rusher.
All right. Thank you for that question. Let's see. Can some of this also on the text line driven by Duval Ford, can some of the receiver fumble issues be attributed to lack of strength? Some of these receivers are kind of on the slight side, says a questioner here.
Yeah, I mean, look, most receivers are on the slight side. That's kind of the nature of the position. No, it doesn't have anything to do with weight room strength.
Okay. Well,
Tyler Shatley would never fumble.
Never.
And
here's the thing, too. Like, Rashad
I doubt
Green,
he'd ever be given the opportunity.
Rashad lost the ball. He was being tackled, but yeah. the ball was not being hit out of his arm when he fumbled that ball.
It was being pulled out.
It was?
Yeah, the defender did a really good job with that, yeah.
I thought it – boy, I saw a shot of it pretty clear. I thought it was just coming loose on its own.
No, he pulled it out.
Did he? Yeah. I'd have to go back and watch that again. Love how after 100 yards from scrimmage and a 2-touchdown game, Jeff and Baselli last night have been down on Fournette. So apparently somebody not agreeing with your critique of his game that he had this week.
And whoever this is, I mean, get the NFL ticket package, whatever it is, and rewatch it. And from the film, NFL film version, and then you come back and let me know next week what you think.
All right. Let's see here. Oh, did we ever get an Eric Linder update?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything.
Nothing on Eric Linder.
Yeah.
All right. So
who knows?
maybe you're conflating a couple of different guys.
I know somebody in my past by the name of Eric Linder, and I'm drawing a blank.
All right. We'll give you until next week.
Sure.
Do you want to keep your spot?
I will say this about the Fournette thing, you know, talking about the 2 touchdowns and 100 yards from scrimmage. And, look, I don't disagree with you, right? Like, you go back and you watch the tape, and he left plays on the field.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's terrible.
Right. I do think you go look. Blake looked like he was relaxed for the first time in a month and a half. And I think a lot of that is Leonard Fournette's back in the offense. Like, there is a real impact of having Fournette back on the field for this offense. That doesn't mean he got everything he could have out of that game that day. Mm-hmm. But I think they need him to help everything else in the offense work right.
I think here's the thing. I think that it calmed the offense down as a whole, Tony. And,
yes.
And you're right as far as Blake looked more relaxed. But also the play calling was more relaxed. So if they got 2 yards with the run, it was okay. That's fine. I mean, just you keep kind of sticking with it and get to a manageable third down, and I think that his presence helped. My point is that if you're going to be a truly an impact back, which you look around the league, you know, the Todd Gurley, heck, you'd even put James Conner in that category. I mean, he's third overall in the National Football League in rushing yards. But if you're going to be a truly an impact back, you can't have those plays where you leave significant yardage on the table. You can do it once in a while. But there was 5 opportunities in the game that I thought that the yards were left on the table. That can't happen. You're talking about a third overall pick in the draft. You know?
No doubt.
And here's the other thing. That really doesn't matter. What matters is that he has the ability to accelerate and be a physical back. He's proven it. He's shown it. I watched play after play after play at LSU where he did that. That's what you need to see out of him for this team.
But I went back. You know, I was focused on that play with Rashad Green. 26 is tackling him to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. You don't see it clearly unless you look for it on the angle. He does kind of – it's not one of those where the ball comes flying out. He kind of pulls on it.
And then it kind of slowly leaks out.
Yeah, so you're right. He did get a hand in on that one.
You didn't believe me?
I just wanted to see it with my own eyes. I mean, you know how it is. Sometimes you go back and you're like, that was this. And then you look at the replay and you're like, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't.
Yeah,
that.
No, that's right.
All right, so Logs, they play Pittsburgh this week. They have some recent success against the Steelers, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Pittsburgh coming off a very impressive win of their own with a little extra time to prepare for this game. They're not at all, despite the Jags' record, going to overlook them based on the way last year went.
No.
What kind of chance you give the Jags to make it another victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers this week?
Well, I think they've got a chance because last year with the personnel that they have for the most part, obviously some parts are out with injury, but they've got pretty close to the same team that enabled them to beat Pittsburgh twice last year. you know, at their place. So that obviously would give you confidence that they can do it again. But the part that says, I'm not so sure about that, is not only that the Jaguars losing five consecutive, but just the level that the Pittsburgh Steelers offense is playing at right now. They have the ability to score a lot of points. They're one of the top scoring offenses in the National Football League. They scored a lot of points against the Jaguars defensively in the playoff game last year. The Jaguars offense at that time was able to recover and to keep pace. But do you think that the Jaguars offense can keep pace this year if the Pittsburgh Steelers score points like that? That's, you have a hard time thinking that can happen.
The thing was, in that game, the Jags had a 21-0 lead, right? Didn't they get, it was 21-0 and 28-7. So they played from in front in that game.
Which makes it kind of nice.
Obviously, right? And it still was very close down the stretch. But look, you'll take whatever kind of victory you get in the playoffs. The thing that concerns me, just watching this past week, Jeff, with Linder now out, you got questions on who your left tackle is going to be. That pass rush was dominant last Thursday night against
Carolina.
I mean, Cam Newton had very little time to set his
feet
and throw.
Guys. I mean,
multiple guys from multiple angles, and it was all game long. It wasn't one or two big third downs. It was consistent every time he dropped back.
That's the challenge of facing a Pittsburgh defense, is that, you know, in years past, and for the most part, the Blitzburg defense, which that moniker has been with them for a long time, it's a very simple defense on early downs, first down and 10, second down and four or less. But when you give that defense second and 7+, third and 6-7+, then it becomes which guy is coming from where. And they do a great job with their linebackers and finding creative ways to send one guy and drop another guy. And that's, I think that's the beauty of the 3-4, is that you're not sure which guys are coming and which are not. And that's the amount of confusion that they were able to create with Cam Newton and that Carolina Panthers offense was pretty intense. Now, I mean, they had essentially, Cam Newton didn't have much of a chance, but part of that was on Cam Newton.
Yeah, well, it was. In what regard?
And that identifying guys that are unblockable. When you when you have certain protections as a quarterback, you go, okay, this is the protection. Okay, so now that I know the protection, this guy over here, 98, even,
or whoever,
Williams, right, or 50, I can't block him, so I have to take a peek at him as I'm dropping back, and he's going to tell me what I need to do. Do I have time to read my defense, or do I have to get rid of the ball and I have a hot release? And there was two different instances in that game that was clearly on Cam Newton. He had an unblockable guy twice, and he didn't even identify it. The thing that scares me about Pittsburgh, Mike, I mean, their defense is scary up front. I don't think their coverage is great, but the Jaguars' wide receiving core is not great, so that's kind of a wash. But with the new components up front and then the fact that they're playing pretty well in the front seven, that concerns me. But the Pittsburgh Steelers offense, they got a new offensive coordinator, and they're playing at an unbelievable level. The amount of yards they're putting up, the amount of points that they're putting up, the production in the red zone, how Ben is protecting the ball, how he's utilizing all of his weapons, the productivity of James Conner. They seem to have every component of their offense performing at a very high level.
All right. With that, let's check in with our friends at the Midday Chalk.
Now, it's the 2-Minute Drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Get your Gator Game Day tailgate catering delivered to your tailgate every home Florida Gator game. Visit moescateringfl.com to order.
All right, Locke's got one of your former teammates here, Leon Searcy, joining us now for the Midday Chalk. What's up, Big Leon?
What's going on, gentlemen?
We were just talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers coming in. I'm sure you saw them last Thursday night, and with Brandon Leonard going on injured reserve, the threat that the Steeler pass rush poses to this offensive line, how big of a concern is that for you this week?
Well, I'm concerned for the most part because the offensive line is going to have to do a great job up front communicating not only to the guys up front but the guys in the backfield as far as the running backs on where they're going to go protection-wise and who's going to get the help as far as the guards go, whatever. So it's going to be a very interesting task for the offensive line for the Jaguars. But the whole key to stopping the zone blitz, the 3-4 zone blitz, is just you got to communicate and you got to execute.
Communication. That hasn't been their strong suit here, Leon, in the last,
I
don't know,
absolutely
10
agree.
Weeks or so. Right? All right. Tell us, communicate with us. What do you guys have coming up today on the Midday Chalk?
Well, we've got a little bit of Jalen Ramsey, of course, in his tweet, much to do about nothing, but we're going to still talk about it. Then Leonard Fournette had a couple of things he said on Instagram that we're going to talk about. And then we're going to talk about the Jaguars, you know, all the expectations of this year, you know, them playing a first place schedule and where the Jaguars are front runner going into the season. And we got a little college football to talk about there, here and there. So we've got an interesting hour and a half going with the Lunch with Leon.
All right. Good mix there. Leon, have a great show today, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, buddy. There he goes, Leon Searcy, along with Rick Ballew and Lauren Rue, coming up for the next 3 hours. Logs, where will Jaguar fans be able to catch you this week?
Usual stuff. Got to Jaguars Happy Hour with the Doug Marrone Show and Amin Buscelli and JP. And then Jaguars Weekend, got a little film segment with Doug Marrone. Got the outdoor show Saturday. And then game day on Sunday with you. And by the way, how'd I do in fantasy?
I don't know. Who'd you have?
I had Wentz. Carson Wentz, and he threw for a lot of yards.
He was okay.
And
you had Melvin Gordon. He had a good game.
Had Melvin Gordon.
Yep.
And then my receiver was Devontae Adams. He had 2 touchdowns, but not a lot of yards.
Yeah, not a lot of yards. You probably did okay.
Good.
I would imagine.
I was kind of concerned about Carson Wentz.
Yeah, slow start for him on Sunday night. I do love the fact that Logs is one of the first things he wants
ridiculous?
To know about with me every time you see
him. It was the last thing I wanted to know about today, though, but it's definitely on my mind all the time.
Well, and we didn't even get to fun with social media with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but guess what? There'll probably be more instances of that to discuss when we talk to you next week. Logs, have a great week.
Thank you.
Good stuff, Tony, as always, for our producer, Emmanuel E.T., here with us, and for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thank you for listening to Jaguars today. We'll be back at it again tomorrow from 10 to noon right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go to the...